Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative. In the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city.
I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, and a bonus of visiting with cab drivers here is that I hear cool tales about where they grew up, and it's often a far-off, exotic land, as was the case when I hung out with Samuel Isaac, who was raised in Ethiopia. Samuel and I had so much fun talking about his life in America that he refused to accept payment for the crosstown cab ride from DuPont Circle to the Capitol Mall. Regretfully, I was so engrossed in living in the moment with Samuel that it didn't occur to me to record Samuel's tales until moments after he pulled away from the curb. The next afternoon, cab driver Alexander Burko picked me up in front of NPR headquarters for the cab ride out to National Airport. This time, I was locked and loaded, and Burko agreed to let me record his D.C. cabbie stories, including the dark days of the 1980s when D.C. was known as the murder capital. He talked about former Mayor Marion Barry and the struggles that traditional cabbies face by brutal competition from Uber and Lyft, and most importantly, his passionate pride for Washington, D.C. I'm Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me in Alexander's cab as he talks story about his life in D.C. since emigrating from Ghana 38 years ago.
My name is Alexander Burko, B-E-R-K-O. Originally, I'm from Ghana, but I grew up in London. I came to the United States in 1979. I've been here over, I'd say, 38 years. I've lived in the D.C. metropolitan area. I originally went to California and I moved over here. What do I like about D.C.? Oh, wow, I love D.C. a lot. D.C. has got a lot of happening to it. I've seen the good, I've seen the bad, I've seen the poor, and I'm now beginning to see the good. However, of any good, it comes a price. The city is very, very expensive. I used to remember D.C. to have less than 100,000 people living here. Now they have over 650,000 people working here. I used to remember when the city used to be called the murder capital of the world. That was truly true because every day you heard gangs shot, you hear people dying, you meet somebody who you knew. Anytime you didn't see him for a couple of months, you would ask where he is, and you'd be told he's been laid down to the ground. So it was a very scary time during the 80s. But the city has progressed over the last 3 decades.
Why did it change? How did it change?
It was very hard to see. I guess a lot of people saw that the city was a city that it's all the time has the federal government here to support it. You have a lot of businesses that want to be close to the federal government. I do remember during the Bush crisis, the financial crisis, when all the whole world, the whole country was having problems, you know, financially. D.C. never felt it. You know, you had the federal government insulating it. You had big businesses here. So, that was the reason why people moved here.
Back in the day, when Marion Barry was mayor, he was loved and he was hated. Do you have any thoughts about him?
I have both. I loved Marion Barry. I really did. I think he did a great thing for the city. On the flip side of him, I think that it was his problem. He brought himself down. If you're going to ask me what is his legacy going to be, it's going to be very hard because he was a man. When I first came into D.C., you know, I admired him, you know, because he was really fighting for blacks and the black people. Then to hear that he's got mud in, to my opinion, it was really a prostitution scandal because he didn't go there to go smoke crack. I do remember the tape. He said, "I didn't come here for crack. I came here to get the pussy." That's what he was. And the only way he was going to get a pussy was if he played the game. So, but I think after that, he was just frustrated. And the federal government, in particular the Republican Party during that time, were just really after him because they figured that he was, you know, was overspending the city's money, which he wasn't. But I think there was the people that around him that were working for him. And that was the reason why he was never federally indicted on any money laundering, white-collar crime or anything. But my opinion, it's mixed.
But he did good.
He did good. He did good. I don't think there will be any...
It was the human weakness, right?
It was obviously the human weakness of that made him fall. Like everybody, we're not perfect, you know. But he has a great admirers. He had a great following. And I think in history, you go down to be as one of the greatest mayor for the Washington District of Columbia.
I know that you have to get on. You're a cab driver. Exactly. And otherwise, we'd spend 2 hours together. But I'm going to... I know, but I have to let you go pretty quick. But before we go, tell us about your background as a cab driver. When did you start?
I started in 2002. I had a business, the cell phone business and the pager business. And it was now, the big boys were taking over. So I had to sell my distance. And I got into cab. I've had a world of experience. But right now, at the moment, we are struggling because our city council, which we cab drivers don't have a good relationship. They figure that cab drivers don't pick up people, which I beg to differ with them. I don't feel that the city does a lot for cab drivers in terms of protecting them. I know quite a few people that have been mobbed, including myself. I've been shot at, it took a while.
Why did you get shot at?
I picked up a gentleman and I dropped him off and he went into somewhere. He came back running, and I guess as I was pulling up, out the only thing that could, so he jumped back into the cab and started shooting. No, apparently, I guess differences between whoever he is,
right.
But I got caught in the middle, and the police were not able to respond quickly. So, I mean, what is a cab driver supposed to do? He's always going to protect himself. He sees a black person, he's also going to assume that this person, it's not right, but he wants to go home at the end of the day, you know, so, yeah.
Tell us about, you've had struggles recently. All the cab drivers have is the profitability of your business because of Uber and Lyft. Tell us about the problem there.
The problem is that they can come in and, you know, it's a free capitalist society. But the problem is that when you give somebody, when they give a company more leeway than other cab companies, it's not right. I mean, Uber has come in, Uber has gotten everything. They don't get stopped by police officers, they don't get stopped by taxi hackers. I get stopped, I have to, if my cab is even a spit of dust on it, it's called dirty. I'm being charged. I have to dress a certain way, else I'm being fined for that. I mean, all these fines and all of that, kind of takes some.
Why doesn't that apply to Uber or Lyft?
Because they claim that they're not cabs, and that is not true. I mean, they use the same system, what we call a radio dispatch system, but it just now become an app. And so they're getting away with it, and they're saying they're not a cab system. They're just a transport, individuals to provide a service, a transportation service for them. And that's basically circumventing the law.
Looking forward, are you optimistic or pessimistic?
I'm pessimistic. Well, a little bit, because I found that in Europe, they're going after Uber. San Francisco has come out of Uber has lost a case over there. I've heard of Mayor Blasio of New York bringing up that issue. So with all that said, I think there is some hope that, there will be some changes that will bring it all us to the same playing field. Because being an individual business, I can't make money when you allow a company to have all the leeway in the world and you say to a cab driver, you got to do this, you got every 6 months I have to go spend all my money to make my car brand new, buy brand new tires, buy this, but it's not fair, whilst they don't do it. For safety, they can drive a year with bald tires, bald this, and nobody can stop them.
Interesting. Well, only because you have to go pick up another fare, I have to let you go, but it's been awesome. Your name again?
Alexander Berko, B-E-R-K-O.
Alexander Berko, thank you. What a wonderful day with you, riding in your cab around D.C.
Thanks. Thank you very, very much for having me on your podcast. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Washington, D.C., where we've been visiting with cab driver Alexander Berko. Thank you.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort Maui at Wailea invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
To learn more, visit legacytrees.org or call 1-877-707-TREE.